This is
This is unprecedented, but it's the second episode this week of Healing Out. For this particular episode, I sat down with the heavyweight champion of War Zone Wrestling, Pitbull, Craig Cole. Now, War Zone has undergone a sale. The new owner is Lord Mark Williamson, who, lucky for me, is my manager at War Zone. And I wanted to sit down with Pitbull because they are rebranding and launching the company again, anew. And that first show under the new regime will be Saturday, May 21st. So 7 days from when I'm actually recording this introduction. So I thought, you know, I'll have Pitbull on the podcast. We'll talk. I'm releasing two episodes in 1 week. I mean, this is unprecedented. Josh is going to be so happy. But nonetheless, I had a talk with Craig. Craig's old school. He's definitely old school. And I think you'll hear that in this conversation. And I appreciate that. It reminded me a lot of some of my trainers and mentors, his mentality. So I enjoyed the conversation. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I think it's unprecedented, again, that first off, thank you to Carlo Cannon, who opened his training school, Vicious Pursuit, to Pitbull and myself, as we met there on location, sat next to each other on two beanbags, like some weirdos, and we knocked out this podcast. Carlo gave us water. He really rolled out the red carpet treatment, if you know what I mean. So, big shout out to Vicious Pursuit, and thank you, Carlo, for doing that. Thank you, Pitbull, for joining me on this 14th episode. Now, with that said, if it came down to it, I've got to admit to you that I think I could whip Pitbull's ass. I'm just saying. I know he's been around for a while. He is the Warzone heavyweight champion. He's got about 15 years in the business, but I'm no pushover myself. I've been trained by the best in this business, spent a lot of time honing my craft, and I think I could take Pitbull. I think if I say that enough to him, he'll give me a match to prove whether or not I can overcome that mountain known as Pitbull. So either way, I get myself a title match. So yeah, I think I could whip Pitbull's ass. And once I do whip Pitbull's ass, what am I going to do? What would you do if you were me and you whipped Pitbull's ass? I'll tell you what you'd do. You'd go to WrestleMerch in order to get your own merchandise. Why WrestleMerch tees? Well, their tees and hoodies are screen printed one by one to ensure precision and quality every time. They can design artwork for you, just like they did for us here at Wrestle Radio Australia. They can even do custom things, like I hosted a podcast with Pitbull Craig Cole, and I told him to his face, I think I could whip his ass. Now, really, when I said that, he kind of bowed up on me, and I got scared. That's the reality of the situation. But I'm still going to stick with this, I could whip Pitbull's ass, for the purposes of this ad copy, because you too, even if you couldn't beat up Pitbull, you could still get this shirt made. And the people at WrestleMerch Printing, they would be happy to do this for you. In the past, they've taken care of superstars such as TMDK, Jimmy Havoc, Mr. Juicy, Jonah Rock, Damian Slater, The Bestos, Wrestle Rampage, Melbourne City Wrestling, EPW Perth, Hunter Valley Wrestling, and of course, they'll take care of you too. You know, every episode I read this ad copy, and I try to change it up to humor myself in doing it. And I've been saying for weeks now that they've taken care of TMDK. But TMDK is like 9 or 10 guys, isn't it? So which one of those guys did you take care of? Let's get specific here. Anyway, for further details and a quote, send a message to the Wrestle Merch Printing Facebook page. You'll get a prompt reply, friendly service, and be sure to tell them you heard all about it on Healing Out. And if you don't, I'm going to tell Pitbull to whip your ass. Now, with that said, I hope you enjoy the conversation between myself and Warzone heavyweight champion, the Pitbull. We are back for another episode of Healing Out. This time I am sitting in an upstairs office at Vicious Pursuit, and I am joined by the one and the only
Pitbull Craig Cole.
Pitbull Craig Cole. Now, we've got the reboot of Warzone Wrestling coming up on Saturday, May 21st. So I thought I would sit down with the heavyweight champion of Warzone Wrestling and kind of shoot the shit. Craig, what's going on?
Ollie, fantastic.
I always do that. I never call you Pitbull in the right time.
Me too. Exactly. Especially in the ring. It's friggin' awesome. But in their rather palatial surroundings here of Vicious Pursuit, which Carlo Cannon has, graciously and very generously offered his humble abode here so we can shoot this interview, and just looking out and might wander down for a coffee down in Clarendon Street a bit later. So, absolute pleasure to be here.
How nice are these hardwood floors?
They're fantastic, and the beanbags are working a treat as well too.
Yeah, I think when I win the lottery, I am going to rent this room from Carlo and turn it into like my own podcasting / secret jerk off studio.
You know, it has potential.
It has potential, man. I mean, you can look right out here and see, the M1 and Hungry Jacks.
Yeah.
Little shout out to Zorn for the Hungry Jacks.
Yeah.
So,
has he got his fingers on that one, Zorn?
Not on this one. He's got one down the building. I think. Zorn's a whole other conversation, man.
When does the Zorn burger come out?
I'm pretty sure it's already out.
Yeah. That's fun with a lot, isn't it?
Triple meat, double side of bacon.
We love you, Zorn.
So, let's talk, Pitbull.
Yeah, man.
Who you got coming up on May 21st?
Okay, so May 21st at Warzone, the return of Warzone after a 6-month hiatus. December in Ballarat being our last show. Really excited about defending the title once again. The people's title, as I like to call it. It's not only Pitbull's title, it's a title for the people, of the people, by the people, Ali. So, really looking forward to that. Got a big fella called Cadman.
Ah, I know Cadman.
Big, scary guy. Lot of potential. Mark Williamson seems to think that he can throw these roadblocks in my way, and I'm pretty sure that that'll be his intention. But that's okay. My motto is anyone, anywhere, anytime. And Cadman, if you want to try and take what is not only mine, but the people's title, man, you go your hardest, brother.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I do have to admit that I am on Team Mark Williams.
Yeah, and we've managed to catch a little be known to the people that we've actually sat down for a coffee in Clarendon Street beforehand and decided to put our differences aside. But, once the microphone's off, Ali, I can't sort of promise anything.
Well, that leads me to my next question, is that you've got a history with Mark Williamson, so how do you know it's going to be a civil... I mean, he's the new owner.
He is the new owner.
How do you know that you guys can coexist?
Well, we're not going to, and okay. I don't care.
Well, that's a pretty blatant statement there.
So, yeah, well, we're not going to, because I don't like Mark's style. He doesn't like my style. That's fine. We're clearly not going to get along. I'm fully aware that he's going to make it as hard for me as the Warzone champ. But what Mark doesn't realise is I have never been beaten in singles competition in Warzone, ever. And I'm not about to start.
Ever?
Ever. Never been beaten in singles competition in Warzone.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. I take pride in that. And every time I go out to the ring, I make sure that I'm doing my best for the Warzone fans. And so you basically have to kill me to beat me.
Listen, we've got some good chemistry going here. You know, we've been friendly. We had that coffee earlier, like you said. But I got to go out on a limb here, Pitbull. I think I can beat you.
You can beat me.
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm quite happy to have a little bit of a wager on that.
And, well, like I told you, I'm one of Mark's stooges.
Yeah.
So as soon as this podcast is over, I'll get on the phone and stooge it off to him.
Yeah.
And we'll see if we can arrange some kind of an exhibition.
You can call Mark Williamson. You can call Donald Trump. You can call whoever the friggin' hell you like, brother. I'm sure one day soon, in the next upcoming shows, I'm sure we'll get in and then we'll see who the better man is.
If I had Donald Trump's phone number, I would have called him and had him place a bid on buying Warzone Wrestling.
Yeah, well, we do. Funny you mentioned that, because Mark Williamson is the owner, but there is a secret private investor.
Ooh.
That has,
could it be Donald Trump?
Well, it could be Donald Trump.
Could it be me?
I don't know. Is it you?
It might be. Look, man, I got all that Global Force money and it's burning a hole in my pocket.
Jeff, you vote on the phone to Jeff?
Maybe. Maybe I called up Double J and said, hey, I got
it's very intriguing. I mean, even I don't know who this private investor is and private owner is. So, but I do know that they're keeping a very close eye over Mr. Williamson and the way he conducts his affairs. So,
You're under the impression that this person is not a cohort?
No, definitely not a cohort. They've come along, invested in Warzone, haven't got the time to run the company, but are very interested in the proceedings and seeing Warzone grow to obviously better Australian wrestling and the Melbourne wrestling scene. Very interested, but have left it in Mr. Williamson's. I think he provided a few dodgy references along the way, I think. I'm pretty sure. So,
okay, well, in case this secret investor is listening, I'm not necessarily 100% on Mark's team. But, you know, it's negotiable.
Hell, everything's negotiable,
brother.
Yeah,
we'll talk, bro.
Everything's negotiable.
That's what my mentor, Donald Trump, told me.
So, yeah. You know. Well, look, really excited about the show. Got some great talent on the show as well, too. The return of Carlo Cannon, which is fantastic.
I got a couple words for Carlo Cannon.
Oh, that's right. You're facing him, aren't you?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Okay, right, we'll see.
So if he shows up to the building and accepts my challenge.
I was under the impression you were sort of running a bit scared from Carlo.
I don't like the way this conversation is going. So let me ask you a question, Pitbull. So what do you, as the heavyweight champion, as the guy who is the standard bearer for Warzone Wrestling, and with Warzone's now reboot here in the Australian market, what do you feel is going to set Warzone apart? Because let's look realistically. You, in this city alone, in Melbourne alone, we've got Melbourne City Wrestling, Outback Championship Wrestling, Platinum Wrestling Enterprises, Professional Championship Wrestling. Am I forgetting anybody? NAW.
Yep.
Anybody else?
And Warzone as well, too. Obviously.
So Warzone is the sixth.
Yep.
We've got five other companies running within this city.
It's a lot, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing. What's the population of Melbourne?
I think it's up to 4 million now, aren't we?
Okay, so no, it's not too many. Because none of these companies are selling 1,000 seats every month. But what do you... I'm assuming if in a business venture like this, you've got to differentiate yourself from your competition. There's only so many talents in this city. What are you... and the secret investor and Lord Mark Williamson going to do to try to set Warzone apart from everyone else?
Warzone, for me, is like a family. Okay, it's like a home. It's like a second home. And it always has been since it's in. Since I was lucky enough to, I think, be on the fourth ever show of Warzone, which has been running for about 2008. Okay, and very true what you said. One time I sat at a WWE... show, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago now, and I looked around the venue and just took a quiet moment to sort of reflect, and I was sitting with a particular gentleman that's well known in the Melbourne wrestling scene, and sort of pondered. I thought, how many people are here? And he probably said about 18,000-20,000. I said, that's right, and we can't even get 5% of that. What are we doing wrong? What are we doing wrong that we can't even get 5% of an 18,000?
How much time we got?
Yeah, exactly. So we do a lot right, Mm-hmm. Okay, so your question was, again, what's going to make Warzone different to the other six companies is being able to identify where we're going wrong, which is going over a long point of time. And I'm not talking about as in Warzone going wrong or the other companies doing, but clearly we're not doing something to get those other people in.
You mean the industry as a whole?
The industry as a whole, okay? So the first company that can identify that and what we need to do better, I think will be the company that still really starts taking off. So, I mean, it's not really directly answering your question, but at the same time, it's like being able to identify how we get those other people into the shows and putting on a production. People want to come and have a good atmosphere created as well too. So it's the whole experience of the event as well too, as well as offering something different. And I think what you'll see at Warzone is a lot of different talent not seen on other shows that is going to come through the door. That would be the first and foremost point, I would think.
So to differentiate your product, meaning that you're the representative of, because you're the champion.
Well, I think, look, the Silent Investor did give me a phone call yesterday after she found out that I was coming on this show.
It's a she.
Oh, I've let that out of the bag, uh-oh, haven't I?
Uh-oh.
Wow. Gee whiz.
Fair enough. Okay.
Wow. So she has let me know that of her sort of points of view, geez, I let that slip, didn't I? Gee whiz, okay.
Come on, you're supposed to be a
cat's out of the bag. Back to my original point. Yeah, she did give me a phone call, and she's quite happy for me to speak on Warzone's behalf, being the champion, being one of the people and wrestling for the people. So
fair enough. So do you think then it would be a safe assumption to say that we'll see a higher percentage of interstaters on a Warzone show than other shows because of that statement that the female investor made that you referenced?
Yeah, I would say that's a very fair and strong assumption to make.
Uh-huh. Because the way I see the scene is I look around, and there's, what, six companies here? Most talents work for 2 to 3. Some of them work 4 to 5.
Yep.
I don't know anybody that works for all six consistently, just because there's not enough dates on the calendar.
That's right, yeah.
But nonetheless, there's quite a few. I've seen you in a number of them. I work for most of them. There's only a certain amount of talent pool. So unless you're going to have like a six-sided ring, or you're going to have all steel cage matches, or you're going to have t-shirts shot out of a cannon with chicks with big tits and bikinis walking around, you know, giving everybody hand jobs, what is it that you can do?
What shows that get me booked on that one, can you?
It pays to be on Team Mark Williams. What could possibly there be that could set a company apart from its, I don't want to say competition, because I firmly believe that a rising tide brings up all ships.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, when WWE's business is good, the indie's business is good.
Yep.
That's trickle-down economics. It doesn't work for fucking taxes, but it does work for wrestling.
Let's not talk about that, for God's sake. I'm worried about getting a parking ticket here. It's like, apparently the parking inspectors, hello Ben Gilbert, the parking inspectors around here are pretty vicious.
Are you telling me that I can't park up the street?
What was the sign?
There was no sign.
You're gone.
What do you mean I'm going?
Well, I don't know. They're pretty vicious around here.
There's no sign, though.
Well, I don't know. They bring up bylaws. I mean, I don't set the rules. I mean, I don't know. All I know is that I've got to be out of there in a couple of hours, but otherwise I'll have a little...
What a backwards fucking country. Guys are so...
We are so anal over here.
Your Nazis are really parking.
Yeah.
There's no parking spaces. You can't shoot anybody. No. You can't get gay married. What kind of society did I move to?
Don't get me started. You live in the nanny state of Australia, brother.
Really?
Victoria. Yeah. We are a nanny state. You can't even get a solarium in this country anymore. That's how ridiculous it is.
The first time I came, you could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now all the do-gooders got their little knickers up in a bunch, and you can't even get a solarium anymore because apparently it's bad for you. Although I've been having solariums for 25 years and I'm fine. So.
But to be fair, though, there's no ozone layer here, so you could literally walk out. Like, I tanned in the winter last year on my back.
In Melbourne winter, you tanned?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The sun is so much brighter.
Here it is.
Like, it's insane. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
it's kind of a nanny state, isn't it?
A massive nanny state. But let's get back to the wrestling.
So, based on this, in this May 21st, you've got Cadman Turner.
Yep.
Who is physically large. Now, Craig, you're a big guy.
He is. So I'm going to have to adapt my style a little bit. I've got to wrestle smarter. Okay. So, you know, the guy's 6'4". He's a big, strong guy. So I have to be able to adapt what I do a little bit. You know, obviously, I've been training hard the last 6 months. Okay. With a sole purpose in mind to hold on to that belt for as long as I can.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's going to have to be someone pretty exceptional or an exceptional set of circumstances to take it off me.
Like a cat.
Oh, you
I'm not talking shit. I'm just saying he's pretty exceptional. Yeah, he's got Mark Williamson in his corner.
Yeah, and apparently Mark will be out there ringside with him, so you know he can have the whole locker room out there with him. You know, like I said, to get that belt off me, you're gonna have to kill me.
If you were to successfully defend your Warzone Heavyweight Championship on May 21st...
When I just successfully defend the belt.
When you do. What's next for Pitbull?
In terms
obviously,
of,
you're going to be carrying the standard. If you have your way, you're going to be carrying that title for a long, long time.
For a long time.
What's best case scenario for Pitbull? Like, let's go out a year from now. What are you trying to do with Warzone Wrestling as the figurehead? The public face?
That's a good question.
I'm full of good questions,
bro. Best case scenario.
That's why I have this beautiful hardwood floored studio here at Vicious Pursuit.
It's beautiful. And Carlo just polished it up fantastically before we come in.
Carlo gave us water?
In what context are you meaning best possible scenario?
Okay, like for instance, let's say that you could write your own ticket.
Yep.
And let's say that the world is your oyster.
Yep.
You can do whatever you want with
it.
And let's also make that big assumption that Lord Mark Williamson does not give me a title shot against you. And let's make an even bigger assumption that I don't beat you. In a perfect world, Pitbull, where do you see... I know there's a lot of assumptions there, bro. In a perfect world, where do you see Warzone Wrestling in a year from now?
In a perfect world, I see Warzone Wrestling a year from now, and that's up to people like me. Okay, the way I see it, and my viewpoints may differ to other people in the industry, the way I see it is when you've got the title, you're the flagship of the company, and you need to be at the top of your game, for starters, okay, and you're the, basically the arrowhead, the spearhead of the company, so the spotlight's on you. You have to be, like I said, at the top of your game, and entertaining people, and keep on entertaining people, and continue to grow your brand, and continue to get better, not just sit in the comfort zone. I've got the strap, how good am I? I hate that mentality. When you've got the strap, when you've got the strap, you've got to be working harder than before, smarter than before, and better than before to even grow even further. To make sure that A, you keep the title, and B, you keep the company growing, because as the figurehead of the company, you've got to make sure that you keep it growing, as well as the rest of the guys on the locker room.
Well, if asses aren't in seats, there's one guy everybody's going to look at, Pitbull. You're the champ.
The pressure's on you. You're the main event. You know, you're the pinnacle of the show. You've got to be going out there and busting your ass every time you go out there and make sure that the people that have come and spent their $20 or $15 for that 2.5 hours entertainment leave on a high. Leave, I want to come back to that show. And that's also, you know, the responsibility for the other guys on the card as well too. You know, but as the figurehead, you've got the belt, you've got to be leading that. You've got to be leading that charge. You've got to be setting the example. Okay, so in a year, back to your question, in a year's time from now, you know, I see Warzone Wrestling in front of, you know, minimum 400 or 500 people and continuing to grow. This time next year, we want to be holding shows in front of, you know, 400 or 500 people coming to shows, wanting to get more people saying, man, Warzone, that's a great experience. I want to go back and see more.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Pit Bull before you were Warzone Heavyweight Champion.
The sort of past.
So you've we can eliminate any kind of incriminating details here. But Pit Bull the man, you've been around.
Been around.
I would call you grizzled.
Grizzled. Yeah.
Grizzled. That's not a bad thing. I'm grizzled myself.
I've got a well-worn head. Put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you start in this wacky and delightful business?
How far do you want to go back, brother? How far do you want to go back?
Let's go back, dog.
Okay.
Let's go back.
So, all right. So, had a bit of a background in nightclub security. So I bounced to some...
That does not surprise me at all.
Bounced to some pretty heavy clubs. Chevron for a while. Viper Room for a while. There's a place called Cuba. So I did a few of the heavier places. I loved it. Absolute great experience. Went to some fantastic people. One of whom, a gentleman by the name of Judd Reed, who a Kyokushin karate expert. Judd Reed actually did the 100-man kumite. And
the blood sport gimmick.
Yeah.
From the 80s movie, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, but he actually did the 100-man kumite, and you can actually buy it on DVD. It's called the 100-man fight, and it's one of the most inspirational things you'll ever see in your life. Judd is a ripping fella. Yeah, I'm giving you a cheap plug joke, so I hope you're hearing this, okay? Judd is a ripping fella, and you know, I like to draw motivation from a lot of different people, because as you know, man, it's hard to keep on motivating yourself from your own. You know, from your own heart and from your own mind. As motivated and as passionate as what you might be, it is still really hard. So you need to draw inspiration from other different areas. And Judd is an inspiration, and it's someone I draw inspiration from. So, you know, to work that long in the industry and meet people like that was, you know, it was worthwhile. Sure, there was a lot of headaches attached to it and stuff. So, but yeah. So stopped working security. I was also just playing local football for the good old Moonee Valley Football Club in the Essendon District. And then couldn't play football anymore, sort of stopped, didn't want to continue on with bouncing anymore because it was just sort of, you know, draining, working four nights a week till 7 o'clock in the morning. Of course, so
dealing with
yeah,
people
yeah.
constantly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And back then the ice just started to come in. And
oh, perfect.
So, yeah, so I sort of wanted, yeah, I'd sort of had enough. So what's next? So I tossed a few things up, and how it came about that I started wrestling is a guy by the name of Jungle Cat, Matty Muir, would come in to work security one time with us, and we were having a few drinks after, just a couple of knockoff, quiet knockoff drink after one night, and he got up and he did this forward roll over the carpet walking to the toilet. A few of the guys have just looked at him and thought, what the hell's this guy? I said, what's with the roll, brother? When he come back, he goes, oh, it's from wrestling. I said, oh, what sort of wrestling? You know, Greco-Roman or where? He goes, no, professional wrestling. I go, and my jaw dropped.
Yeah.
I said, professional wrestling? I said, not as in the W, back then it was WWF. I said, well, WWF style wrestling? He goes, yeah. I said, man, where do you train? You've got to get me down there.
So you were hooked instantly. Like, you had thought about this, but it was kind of a...
Funny story. Myself and a good friend, Clint, good friend of mine, Clint Lovell, who also worked security at the time. I think it was about 2000. In 2000, I didn't start training until about 2003. Mm-hmm. But back in about 2000, he seen an ad for, I think it was TNT, Greg Bounds, I think IWF, to come up to Sydney to do a six-month pro wrestling training. Mm-hmm. And we're both bouncing at the time. And we said, man, why don't we go up there? We'll get some bouncing gigs up there. It'll be easy. We'll live up there for 6 months and learn how to pro wrestle, and then we'll be off. He got there was some situations going on with his life and my life at the time, so we didn't end up doing it. So it's funny how sort of things sort of turn out after. If we had done that, I mean, who knows, the crossroads where it might have been.
Oh, next step would have been Vince McMahon's office, I'm sure.
Yeah. I had that opportunity once and I couldn't get over there. But
tell me about that.
Yeah, I was invited to a tryout in New Zealand, but couldn't get the passport through quick enough. So
I thought, like, Commonwealth countries, you guys didn't need that shit.
No,
you do?
New Zealand, oh, hell yeah.
Oh.
Hell yeah. So couldn't get the passport through quick enough, so unfortunately...
The goddamn nanny state stopped you from living your dream.
Yeah. I considered a rowboat, but I thought it might have been too... I was a bit worried about the waves and sharks.
They'll get along, throw you in that Papua New Guinea island.
I might have... Who knows where I would have ended up, but yeah, so I had the opportunity. But, you know, look, whether I would have got noticed is hypothetical, but look, I don't sort of regret it because... let's be honest, I took up wrestling at 35, so...
Wow.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that because right now I feel old as fuck, and I'm 37. And I've been doing this 13 years now.
35.
Yeah. That's Diamond Dallas Page started when he was 35, I think.
Well, there you go. Yeah, yeah. So I turned 48 on Sunday.
Good on you.
2 days' time. So I still feel great. I feel like I'm in the best form of my career. Doing my best matches I've done. But the best is yet to come. I still want to grow. I still want to get better. So, I mean, why? I think it's a bit of an ageist society we live in, and people get pigeonholed if they're a certain age. Man, if you're going out there doing just as good a job as you've always done, well, your age is irrelevant.
Yeah, age is nothing but a number, man. Okay. 30 is the new 20.
It is.
Let me ask you this, Pitbull, and maybe my own experiences are coming into this question, but being in that I'm 37 now, there's really nobody in this scene that I'm aware of. Cracker Jack's the same age as I am.
Yeah.
You're a little older, 48. I think Sean's a little up.
Sean's 2 years younger than me.
Yeah, Sean. So Sean's.
And you got Wayne Maytar, I think it is, from Wayne the Maniac, from he lives up in Queensland now. He's
okay.
42, big Wayne.
Okay, 42, big Wayne. Sometimes when you walk into these shows, do you look around and say, fuck, I'm surrounded by children?
All the time.
So how do you deal with that, man? How do you keep your cool? Look, I would imagine you can keep your cool because you worked in the nightclub industry, you're dealing with drunk meth heads.
Yeah. You do have to keep your cool. I think a lot of the younger generation. And I'll probably cop some flack for this, but you know, hey, I don't give a shit.
Fuck them. This show's called Healing Out.
Yeah. I think a lot of the younger generation need to be a little bit more respectful and a little bit more professional.
In what way?
I've been watching this for the last few years now. When we first start wrestling, why do you first start wrestling, Ali? Why do you first go down to your first training and take your first bumps and put your body through that? Why do you do that?
Well, because I already had a pair of kick pads, so, you know, I had to put them to use. No, it's because you love the business. You love wrestling.
Wrestling. Yeah. Exactly. People start off and they love wrestling. Mm-hmm. And then they get caught up in the politics. And they focus a switch to becoming a better wrestler and improving to focusing on the politics. And I think a lot of the younger guys these days are too focused on the politics, the backstabbing, and all the troublemaking that goes on, rather than continuing. Also, where I've seen a big flaw in a lot of the younger guys is they rise really quickly. And they get they get really good. And there is a lot of great young talent around. But once they get to that level, they then sit in their comfort zone and don't try and get even better and don't try to even improve. They're happy just sitting in that ground, that comfort level that they've already created. There's some fantastic talent. I'm not going to name names, okay? There's some fantastic young talent that we have, but I think they are happy just to consider themselves that they've made it because they get slapped on the back by a few hundred people. You haven't made it.
But do you think that is more of a function of living within a bubble? A bubble meaning Australian wrestling?
100%. But you've got to look, and that's that fishbowl mentality that we have. Mm-hmm. You've got to get out of that fishbowl mentality and think outside the square.
I think that's industry wide, brother.
Yeah.
The nanny state doesn't have a monopoly on that. No, it's literally worldwide.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, I mean, think about it. It takes a certain amount of a healthy ego in order to go and put on your underwear and go out into a public setting and perform. Makes sense?
Yeah.
So if you get cheers and adulations, or if your job is to get booed out of the building and you get booed out of the building and you're also in your underwear, I could see, especially with a lack of life experience, how people would take that into meaning maybe a little bit more than it actually does. And that's not to say that this is what I was referencing. When I asked you the original question, I was referencing just like people acting like idiots and shouting and nonsense and that kind of stuff. But now that you made the point, I fully well and engaged to have this conversation. I think it's more of a lack of life experience.
And I don't think it's limited to the professional wrestling industry. I think anybody in the... Look, I used to work in a mortgage business before I even got into wrestling. And there were dickhead mortgage people, too.
Oh, there's dickheads everywhere.
Yeah. So a guy sells $20,000 of mortgages in a month, and he thinks his dick's 10 feet long, and he goes and buys a car, and he tells everybody how over he is. Yeah. No different than wrestling.
No. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I'm not shit-canning the younger guys.
No, of course
not. Because like I said... one of my roles, my role away from wrestling is I run programs in schools for students, like high school students and primary students. One of the reasons I love what I do is getting the young students to realize their true potential and true value in themselves. Mm-hmm. And then starting to watch that come out. One of the things that frustrates me with some of these young guys, for their own benefit, is I know that they're good, but they could be so much even better than what they are.
Yeah.
And they just get held back by A, sitting in that comfort zone, and B, their focus, their 100% focus isn't on making their craft even better. Because it can't be. Yeah. What I mean by that is, if you're 80% focused on wrestling and 20% of your focus is politics and all the backstabbing and all the troublemaking that goes along with that, How can to get better, 100% of your focus needs to be on wrestling. So you're holding yourself back by focusing on the politics and all the rest of the crap that goes with it. If you can see my point.
I see your point, but my question is it that much of a political thing? I don't know. I'm an outsider. Yeah. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's because I didn't have to start on the ground floor in this scene, so I'm not aware of what politics may exist. I don't know. I can tell you there were politics involved at OVW where I came from. It's a part of the business.
It is part of the business, but it doesn't need to be as big a part of the business as what it is. I mean, I'm a simple creature, okay? That tattoo I've got there on my forearm, I'm bad for radio, okay? But that tattoo's significance. Half of that tattoo, the skull part of that tattoo, is... I'm very simple. I'm just concerned with my own thing, okay? So, becoming a better wrestler, becoming a better worker, becoming a better person, because we all need to become better people. We all have our faults and our weaknesses, okay? So, yeah, so continuously working on that, okay? So just leave me alone and let me do my own thing. But if you want to, we open to.
Brother,
but if you want to fuck with me, okay, well then I'm going to get my back up. If you're going to try and destroy what I'm creating and what I'm doing, well then you're going to cop both barrels and you'll end up like that skull. That's.
I told you, Pitbull's grizzled.
Is that the grizzle? I'm a pretty simple creature, okay? You know, you show me respect, I'll show you double. But if you try to fuck me, I'll fuck you twice as hard.
So, based on that, let me ask you, when you originally broke into the business at 35, was that something that was instilled to you, or do you think that's life experience?
No, that's me.
Yeah.
That's been me since my teenage years. So why would I change? Because I've worked. Because I move into a different industry. Mm-hmm. That's just me, brother, and that's the way I operate. That's the way I've always operated. So I don't see any need to change.
Yeah.
Well, I've definitely find you to be a straight shooter. Like, you're a guy that I could sit in a hardwood office and tell straight to his face, I could beat you, and you look right at me and you say, no, you can't. You know, I appreciate that about Pitbull. You know. So where exactly did you get that start? Where did you put on your tights for the first time?
Went down to George Julio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the hitman. Trained most of the guys in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Trained there for a little while. Also trained at, did a little bit of training at PCW. And so I got my start from there. My very first match was at a show up in Darwin. A guy took a tour up here to Darwin for a week. It wasn't a success, but geez, it was a lot of fun for the week. And got my very first match, actually against George. My very first match was against George.
Did he stretch you?
it was a terrible match, mate. Like, I probably wasn't ready, and but you know, hey, got thrown into the deep end, and it wasn't one of my better performances, let's be honest. But I don't know anyone that can look back at their first match and be happy with it. So you know, I'm in a
very true.
Yeah. So, but yeah, then I just progressed from there. I started doing shows, obviously, for NAW and PCW, and. You know, once again, when I started at PCW, there was a bit of a rift that happened, and a lot of guys left, and they were looking for guys. And after about 6 months of working at PCW, they I got the heavyweight title, which I didn't think I was ready for at the time.
I'm guessing, though, you were probably a body guy back then, because you're a body guy now.
Yeah.
And, you know, you as a current champion now know how important that is. You gotta look the part.
You do.
To be the figurehead.
It's not only looking the part, it's you got to engage the people. You've got to engage them. You've got to get them emotionally invested. And one of my biggest bugbears with workers is, oh, it's a shit crowd. They won't pop. Or I hate that. No, it's your fucking job to make them pop. And if you can't make them pop the first time, you've got to make them pop the second time. You've got to try and make them. And you've got to find a way to get a reaction from that crowd. Because what happens then is the guys go out and do their first match. Oh, shit crowd, they didn't pop. So the rest of the guys in the locker room hear that. So they won't bother then working the crowd. And it filters through. It shouldn't filter through, but it does. I hate that mentality.
I agree with you 100%, but I also think that sometimes, look, there's no shit crowd. It's either shit workers or it's a shit production.
1,000%.
Because if you, let's say we decide to have a show and we put a ring down wherever and it's super bright and it's very hard to remove yourself and you see the boys, the locker room, barely on the other side of the curtain, and everybody's coming out the same door, so they're obviously friends because they're in the same locker room. It gets real hard to lose yourself in the production that you're seeing, which then if you're sitting around a bunch of people in broad daylight that you don't know, then in my experience, people don't necessarily want to come out of their shells. So from the company standpoint, that's one aspect. The second aspect is the workers themselves.
Both have to be, the company needs to provide the type of atmosphere where it's an intimate setting. Well, for instance, Platinum last week, they've got those new lights.
Yep.
How awesome did that look?
Fantastic.
So that's what I'm talking about. That's the type of environment where, you know, I'm sitting in the front row. I can't necessarily see the people 3-4 seats down from me. Or definitely across the ring from me. So I'm more apt to act like an asshole, to lose myself, and to all that kind of stuff.
That's self-aware.
Yes, the self-awareness from them goes away.
You need to, and that's one of the things that I still see holding a lot of guys back. They still have a little bit of self-awareness about them.
Well, that comes with experience.
It does come with
experience. Or I should say it goes away with experience.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because wrestlers are paranoid. That's why politics exists in the first place. It's a phony business. People are paranoid about their spot. Oh, well, maybe I don't have a great moonsault, but I can go kiss this guy's ass and it'll overcome my moonsault. I mean, it happens.
The old ass kissing works a treat, doesn't it? Yeah, I've never resorted to that and never will. So it might have cost me bookings in the past, but hey, I can hold my head up high and say that I'm never part of the circle jerk and never will be. So
Fair enough. PCW, heavyweight champion. Probably before you were ready, but yeah, still it happens. So.
Yeah, it still happened. And look, back then, the locker room, geez, I feel like I'll go into a locker room. It's just, it's funny, you know. I mean, I'm wrestling Cadman, the guy's 24, so, you know, I'm wrestling a guy, you know, half my age. It just happens. So.
Twice your size and half your age.
Hey, not twice my size.
If you saw how serious his face got just now, my apologies, Craig.
Maybe one and a half my size, but yeah, I'll give you that one. Twice, gee whiz, man. I thought I was looking all right too. The locker room was really, really young, and that's where I got my nickname, the Uncle, from, because the younger guys in the locker room said that I was like their crazy older uncle. So that's where the Uncle nickname come along from. So nice. Way back then. So
who's your uncle?
Who's your uncle? Exactly. Yeah, and hopefully me, just not your daddy. Where was I going with that?
So PCW heavyweight champion earlier than you needed to be, but still grateful for the opportunity.
Extremely.
So how long were you at PCW?
For the first stretch, quite a while.
And when I say you were PCW, you were enrolled in their training program, correct? Like you went to class. You were trained by them?
I would still go to George's and train, because I used to live over in the western suburbs still those days.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'd go to George's and train, and PCW would hold Sunday morning training sessions, I think it was, and George would take those classes, so I would still come over and do some training there. Then that led to me taking the training at PCW, because at the time I didn't think they had any one else that was eligible to do it. So I trained their guys for a little while, had some differences and left, then was wrestling for just various other different companies around. And then Benny started up Warzone, started wrestling for Warzone, wrestled for...
And this is 2008,
2009? Yeah, 2008, yeah. So then went back to PCW and started training guys, sort of patched up our differences and went back there and started training guys again. One of the guys that I trained was a guy that's on WWE Developmental now, Chris Atkins. So actually approached him in the gym one time. Just a young guy sitting there, big boy, and he was in the newsletter that Spartan's gym would have. He was member of the month, and I noticed in his interest it was WWE. So I thought, the next time I see this kid in the gym, I'm going to approach him. So sure enough, about 3 days later, I seen him in the gym and went up and introduced myself. Would you be interested in wrestling? He said, yeah, but I didn't know there was anywhere you could do it around here. And, you know, rest is history. So,
and now he's making paychecks from WWE.
Yeah, exactly. So fantastic attitude. And this is no disrespect to anyone that I've ever met in wrestling, yourself, and when you're not under Mark Influence's tailcoat, that is.
He pays me, sir.
And Carlo, and, you know, some fantastic attitudes. But from a young guy, not knowing anything, learning the business and learning how to wrestle, he has got the best attitude I have ever seen. And I'm quite confident that he'll make it really well.
Well, it doesn't hurt that he's 6 foot four or five.
Excuse me,
6 foot six, yeah. Jacked as fuck,
yeah.
And young.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the formula. Can he talk?
He's been under my tutelage in learning how to do promos.
Yeah, you're a pretty good promo.
Although my last one on Saturday was shocking, but anyway. So I've been coaching him along. That's the only thing where he's. Because he's not that extroverted sort of person, so for him to do that extroverted thing in a promo doesn't come easy to him. But he, just before he went back over, he did start to really nail some promos, and some of the promos he's done over there already in developmental, they've been really, really happy with. So yeah, he's coming along really well. So
yeah, they have the facilities there to make him really good.
Oh, he's
so they will.
Just on attitude alone,
mm-hmm.
And for a big guy, for a big 6 foot six guy, he moves pretty well. He's pretty agile. So you know, on attitude alone, he will do very well, mate. Very, very well.
Quite
easily. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think he could be Australia's greatest ever export in terms of wrestling.
Really?
Yep.
More so than Nichols and Haste.
More so than Nichols and Haste.
Well, that is a bold statement, sir.
Nothing against Mikey and Shane, okay?
Well, they're not 6 foot six.
They are phenomenal workers, exactly. But Chris has just got this look and this aura about him, and I'm loving what I'm seeing in terms of him. Even just the way he's posting things on Facebook these days, with more out there, more extroverted sort of stuff. And I just sit back and look at it and just put a little smile on my face. And,
yeah. You like that he's coming out of your shell, because you were the guy that found him and kind of put the idea in his head that it's a reality that he could pursue.
Yep.
And then he did it.
Yep.
And then he pursued it, and then he got signed, and now he's over there.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not one of these people that are going to sit there and take credit for it. All I did is I found something.
Well, he's 6 foot six and jacked. Yeah.
All I did is I found something, polished it up, and the rest, he did it, mate. So, you know, he's the one that come to those trainings.
How awesome does that make you feel, though, as a small part of your contribution to the bigger industry in a whole, and the fact that you helped this kid maybe realize a dream that he may not have realized if he didn't have a chance mention in the Meathead Gym newsletter where he stooged off that he likes wrestling, you know what I mean? And then you happen to see it,
yeah,
you know?
It just, Spartans isn't a Meathead Gym. It used to be, but they've cleaned it all up. It's a very family-friendly gym, Vicky.
My apologies. Yeah. My apologies, Spartan Gym.
So, yeah, it does give me a lot of sense of satisfaction for the boy, for him. Okay, because he's driven. He, you know, he even tried to go into the modeling industry there for a while. They told him to lose all his weight, which he wasn't happy about. You know, he still kept, he's had great shape, but he lost a lot of his sickness. And so that venture didn't work out for him. So he's always had this drive to be something, you know, and now he's like, you know, grasping distance away from it. I'm just happy for him, man. So, yeah.
Yeah. So 2008, Warzone Wrestling started up. You jumped on board early on.
Yep.
Tell me about it. Tell me where Warzone came from up until where it is today. Because the previous owner gave me about 10 DVDs.
Yep.
So I've watched quite a bit of Warzone. Even when I was living in Louisville, I knew of Warzone Wrestling because of Pierce and Cabana.
Yeah.
So it had gotten all the way 8,000 miles away in Louisville, Kentucky. I knew what Warzone Wrestling was.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I got to come here a couple times, and then I ended up meeting Ben, and I met some of the boys and Pierce and whatnot. I didn't actually start for Warzone myself until, what was it, October?
It was about then.
Yeah.
Maybe
September. Regardless, you're a guy who's been there from almost day one, and you're here now.
Yep.
So tell me where it's gone and some of the highs and lows, bro. Let's go.
Well, definitely the highs was when we had Colt and Adam over here. Definite high. And we're wrestling in front of packed stadiums because of the interest that generated.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the roster in the early days was a phenomenal roster. I mean, the first show I did, I just had had to do a run-in, and the main event for that night was Shane Haste and Damian Slater. So, man, yeah, it was phenomenal. So there've been some fantastic talent come through that doors and on the roster. You know, we had guys from South Australia, Jag and Robbie Hart used to come over, and Ryan Eagles from Sydney and Robbie Eagles, and been some incredible talent go through the door. Orlando's worked on the show as well too, so Paul London, so that were the highs. I mean, that happened in a year time frame. You had Paul, Orlando, and Gadam and Colt. So all in that 1 year time frame, and that was the definite high. That was when Warzone was at its pinnacle. Before that, so Ben Gilbert did a fantastic job, amazing job, and what made it even more amazing is he basically did it all off his own bat.
Yeah,
you know, doing poster runs and contacting different newspapers and media organisations, and he's got us on Win TV a couple of times, and
he put me on Win TV to promote my debut show, whatever it was.
Yeah, so he worked his ass off, and then he got let down by a lot of the boys. I think a lot of the boys took advantage of Benny, which was disappointing, and the politics in the locker room started and all the rest of it, and it was just getting sort of out of control. So Ben decided to get rid of a few of the bad influences, but it started to wear him down, I think, really wear him down. And there was a time when he was going to sort of pack it all up and give it away, and myself and Sean sort of convinced him to keep going. He said, well, I can't do it by myself anymore. I said, well, I'll help you. So I used to go and help him set up, you know, at 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock, we used to meet at the venue, go and set up all the chairs for him, help him set up and help him with the place. So I would organise the bookings for him and do all the bookings. So he needed help. He was drowning, you know. He couldn't do it anymore by himself. So, you know, and he got let down severely, severely by a guy he put a lot of faith in and a lot of helped out a lot. Now, I won't mention his name. It's not worth talking about, but severely by this guy. And I think that hurt him a little bit in terms of not let down from the...
Like let down personally or professionally?
Both. More so personally. Mm-hmm. More so personally. And that really sort of affected Benny. So, you know, I seen that situation, seen how upset Ben was over it. And, I thought you need some help, you poor bugger. You know, because I could see the potential in Warzone because it was different. It just always had a different... That's one thing you say about Warzone. It's always had a different vibe and a different feel to the other companies.
And it's always been more of a adult-oriented, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's not necessarily a kids' show.
No, but we do cater to the families, yeah. But
okay.
It goes up to that line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It treads right on that line. So, yeah, I mean, it is still a very family-orientated show, but sometimes the line's a bit blurred. So, yeah.
So it would be a fair statement, I guess, for me to say that you definitely have sweat equity in Warzone.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Besides the fact that you've been a talent there for, what, 8 years now?
Yep.
You have literally helped the previous owner setting up the chairs, putting up the ring, flyer in the town.
And see, a lot of guys that would be in my position think they're over and above that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't need to help set up the ring. I don't need to help set up the chairs. Well, you know, it's a bit of a head up your ass attitude and a bit of, you know, if it needs to be done for the betterment of the show, so if every guy in that locker room goes out and wrestles in front of as many people as you can, isn't that what we're all trying to strive for? You know, but a lot of guys don't see that picture. Oh, well, I've been wrestling for 5 years. I don't need to set up any venue. Well,
hopefully, before Chris Adkins went to NXT, you told him to be the first guy to break that ring down.
He knew that anyway, man.
Good. If you knew how many careers I saw end because of something like breaking a ring down,
wow,
you'd be amazed.
Well, so then they were never going to make it anyway, because if they got an issue pulling down the ring, they, you know, when the 1,000 other obstacles in their way come up, they wouldn't have been able to handle it anyway. So, there you go. So then it went through a bit of a dip. Come back up again massively when we had the Adams and the Colts and all those guys, and as well as, you know, pushing a lot of the local talent. I mean, where Adam Brooks is today is definitely as a direct result from Benny and putting him in a match with Paul London, and that really elevated Adam.
I'm just scrounging for my phone here.
Really elevated Adam a lot. And so, you know, Warzone's helped push a lot of young talent and make them, the push from Warzone, where some of this talent is today, is a direct result of the push that they got from Warzone at the time. No doubt. No question about that whatsoever.
And it's, look, at the very least, it's another platform and it's another opportunity for guys to hone their craft.
Oh, 100%. 100%. 100%. So, and it took a little bit of a downward spiral again with the venue. I think we just, I don't know what happened with the area. And then Benny just got sort of burnt out a little bit. And, you know, he's got his young family now. So your priorities changed a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
But he still has a passion for Warzone, and it'll still always be his baby.
It's his baby. Yeah.
So, yeah, he's heavily involved still now. And the private investor is quite happy to have him on board as well too. And, I'm also giving her a little bit of responsibility as well too in helping sort of organise things with Benny. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So where can I follow all things Pitbull? Give me your social media.
Can follow all things Pitbull on my Facebook page, Pitbull Craig Cole. Log in. I do apologise to all my fans that are on there at the moment. My I do need to be more socially minded in terms of my social output. I'm a very private person in real life, so you know, who would have thought that what I do in the ring and that extroverted character you see. I mean, I'm still an extroverted character out of the ring, obviously, as you know, Ali, but I'm a very private person, so I do need to get out there more and put myself out there more on social media, so you can see me on that. I do have a Twitter account, but I've even forgot the name of it, so there you go. So I need help with the Twitter as well too. So anyone out there wants to sort of help me increase my social media profile, hey, drop me a message. I'd be more than happy to hear from you.
There we go. Fair enough. The date is Saturday, May 21st. It's the Wellington Secondary College at 91 Police Road in Mulgrave. It's Warzone Wrestling Australia. Come see heavyweight champion Craig Cole take on Cadman Turner. Pitbull, I just called you heavyweight champion Craig Cole, didn't I?
You did.
God damn it. And you just started talking about how private you were.
You did.
Josh, edit that out. He's not going to. Any last words, Pitbull?
Yeah. You're not going to wear this latte after this camera switched off. No, it's all good, man. Look, come to this show. We've been away for about 6 months now. What you're going to see is a lot of the old Warzone, but with a brand new, fresh approach as well, too. Okay, so I urge all you Warzone fans that have been to the shows before, come to this show. We've got the return of Carlo Cannon and, my friend, a surprise on the night. A big, big, big surprise on the night that I'm not even going to tell you.
Oh.
Mark Williamson doesn't even know.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So no one knows at all except the good old Uncle Pitbull is the only one that knows. And it's going to be pretty big. Oh, pretty, pretty big. Unless, very big.
Unless the surprise is going to get in my way, then I don't like the surprise.
Well, he may. So come to the show, love to see you there. We'll be in the foyer afterwards, and thank you all for coming, and get behind Warzone, and we can grow, and that's basically it. I'm sort of lost for words now, but implore you all to come to the show, guys. It's going to be fantastic, and launch again. We've got 3 more shows coming up for the rest of the year. Those dates will be announced on the night, okay? So wait to see you there and watch your good old Uncle Pitbull retain his title and Ali Baez get his ass kicked.
I definitely have an ass kick coming. I know. Pitbull, thanks for your time, pal.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Will, the host of the podcast From the Sidelines, proud members of the FNX Network. I'm here to tell you why you should listen to our show. Do you need a comprehensive look over all the sporting happenings in the world on a weekly basis? Then you need From the Sidelines. Me and the guys discuss the bizarre, the serious, and the downright weird in sport every week. Seriously, 1 week we talked about jousting. It was so weird. If you love sport, you'll love our show. So come and join us as we look at sport from the sidelines.